This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everyone. While players and owners battle with each other over the possibility of playing baseball in 2020, the future of the sport has already been greatly affected by the coronavirus pandemic. As part of the agreement signed in March, the first-year player draft will be reduced from 40 rounds to just 5. It takes place next week. Only up to $100,000 of a signing bonus will be paid directly, with the rest deferred. After 5 rounds, players will have the opportunity to sign as undrafted free agents with a maximum bonus of $20,000. Next year's draft will also be reduced to 20 rounds. All of this in an effort by major league clubs to cut expenses in the wake of this pandemic. But the effects have multiple layers that affect not just the minor leagues, but high school and college players as well. And then there's the effect on the major league quality of play, which isn't an immediate one, but the development curve is drastically affected for players that enter this year's draft and players in the low minors that were recently drafted, all of them working without a minor league season, most likely, in 2020. To discuss all the issues surrounding the upcoming draft and more, I spoke with Yankees Vice President of Domestic Amateur Scouting, Damon Oppenheimer. Damon began scouting in 1988, has been with the Yankees nearly 30 years, and has run the Yankees draft since 2005. In 2018, he received a Scout of the Year award at the winter meetings and was honored in 2019 with a Lifetime Achievement in Scouting award. He's one of the most respected men in Major League Baseball with respect to amateur scouting. Here is my conversation with Damon Oppenheimer. Damon, first thing I want to ask you is 5 rounds of a draft a good idea? Was there a better alternative that you could have done given all the circumstances this year?
I think that it was up for debate between the Players Association and owners and things like the different sides. And I think that there was, you know, the hope, I think, on the scouting side that it would be a 10-round draft at the minimum, just because there's so many kids that are involved and it affects pool money and things like that. So we all thought that I know on the scouting side, talking to other directors and scouts in the field and college coaches even, that we thought that it would be, with the situation, it would be a good idea to have a 10-round draft in this year, because we're going right back next year to a 20-round draft.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a lot of trickle down here, and I want to get to that, but you usually spend February to May, you and all your scouts, you're going all over the country and trying to see as many players as you can and make all your evaluations. What are you doing now instead of flying all over the country to watch games? What have the last 3 months been like?
Well, it sure has been unique, that's for sure. I mean, this is, been scouting since 1988, and it's been, just a life of being on the road, and especially this time of the year, it was always on the road, and, you're looking at 250 nights a year, so you were always out there doing the evaluating by watching guys play live, and then supplementing it with video. This year, that got all shut down, so basically, it was going back on the reports that we had had from the summer, back on the reports that we had had on the fall, going to the synergy video that we have from all these games, just watching, you know, at bats and innings pitched, and then trying to find fielding video, and just doing that all by video has been a completely unique situation to us. I think we've learned some things. I think we can use some of this that we've learned during this time to enhance what we see with our eyes once this opens up again at some point. But it's definitely been unique. And then on top of that, we are usually meeting with players face-to-face and having meetings and, you know, talking to the college coaches and talking to coaches in general in face-to-face meetings. And then this year we've become semi-experts in Zoom calls. Hmm. And that's been quite a change, but it's been fun. It's been that part's been kind of neat. The players seem to have a real comfort level of having these Zoom calls and talking to you, and you really become a little bit more, I guess their comfort level in today's world of looking at devices and talking on devices seems to be easier for them, and probably just something that they really can enjoy better than the face-to-face.
Do the older scouts maybe they're challenged a little bit by all the technological stuff that you're talking about, but do they have a little bit of an advantage in the idea that, you know, they can go back to what they saw from a player a year ago and not necessarily be tied to the video? They're able to make maybe some evaluations from what they saw in person, since nobody's seeing them in person now. Is there anything to that?
I think that some of the veteran scouts are able to do is they're usually able to, you know, kind of hold on to what their evaluation was on a player when they saw him 6 months ago, 7 months ago, and they feel comfortable with that because they have such a library of players to compare that to in their past. So I think a lot of them do have that confidence to where they're going to say, I know what I saw. I can see where this guy was going. That's generally what I'm doing anyway, is projecting. So I feel good about where this was going to take me, even though I only saw him throw a bullpen in January, or I only saw him, you know, play one game in February. I saw the right direction that this was going. So I do think there's some stuff that can be, that the older guy that's been doing this a while can really bring to the table during this period.
Listen, everybody's in the same boat, but does it sound like a hard task, an impossible task, to try and grade and draft players that you haven't seen play all year?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. There's no question that we'd be better if we had more looks. There's no question that we would have more comfort level by being at the ballpark. You just can't. That's the stuff that you just can't really take away. I mean, you take that part away, and it's really a large portion of what you see from a player and how he interacts with people. And, you know, no matter how much video you have in the amateur world, you don't have great video on defensive things, first movement, where they're going before the pitch is thrown. You know, your angles aren't always the same. Your view of the player, just when he's, just his reaction to things, it's not the same. Even trying to time guys down the line on video, when it changes from one camera shot to another camera shot, it's not necessarily the normal time that you would get if you were doing it, you know, live. So it's a real challenge. It is. It's definitely a real challenge. And we're just trying to do the best we can, obviously, with the information that we have, and trying to create as much information as possible, whether it's getting, you know, more video, and the data really hasn't changed. So it's just more video and more knowledge of the player. That's about the only way we're able to enhance what we can do.
Damon, the kids from the Northeast have always seemed to suffer a little bit because, you know, they don't play in as many optimal weather games as kids from Florida and California. And even in a year like this, you know, they never really got their seasons going when people in these other areas at least got some action of some kind that you could scout. So are the kids from the Northeast and tough weather environments, are they suffering an extra penalty this year because of that?
I don't think they... Well, it's unique. It's interesting because some of the kids from the Northeast that really came out of the summer and the fall real well, where people were like, I saw that guy very real well. You know, I don't have many questions. I want to see him next year when he's healthy. You know, I think this guy's going to go high. I don't think there's as many questions that people will really, really have on those guys if they feel that they had that comfort level from the summer. Now, that being said, you know, we would like to make sure if somebody wasn't completely healthy at the end of the summer, hey, what were they doing? How do they look this spring? Have they gotten stronger? So getting back to it, some of those guys, it's not going to hurt a lot because they actually didn't come out and have any chance of failing in the spring, where we've had some guys that were in the warm weather states that got scouted and didn't come out of the chute real good. And it probably hurts them mm-hmm. that they didn't perform very well in front of scouts. And that's what people are remembering. So the ones that it's going to affect in the Northeast are the guys that were probably the projection guys that were you were expecting them to come go this fall, get stronger, develop a little bit more into men, come out this spring, and by the end of their spring, maybe they would really continue to develop from the beginning of the spring to the end of the spring, and you know the velocity has gotten creeped up, speed got better as things got warmer, just things like that. So I would say, you know, it's a long answer, but some of them are going to be affected. Some of them aren't. And then some of the guys that got seen in the South are going to be affected negatively too because they just didn't get time to get themselves going in the right direction.
You mentioned injury, and I'm curious how concerned you are about getting honest medical information at this point. I mean, you know, you can see players in games, and if they're not playing, you know why. Or these guys maybe are working out on their own, and maybe they get hurt, and there's nobody to report it to, and they're trying to work their way through this. As you're trying to evaluate, how much of a hurdle is the idea of trying to get real, up-to-date, and honest medical information?
It is a hurdle. I mean, and it's something that we've talked about. And then, you know, you're so restricted in what you can do with getting information from kids because you can't go out and watch them. You can't go out and meet with them. So you don't know what they're doing. You don't know if they've thrown a bullpen or something of that nature and it didn't go well, so they don't post it on their social media account or they don't put it into the Major League Baseball portal. We all see the ones on Twitter and we all see the ones on social media that are really good.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ones that aren't, you know, I wouldn't post it either. So you don't really know. So it is a concern. I mean, I guess the thing that you have to, you fall back on, at least in our situation, is that, hey, if somebody comes in and they fail their physical in the first, or, you know, we only have the three picks, so the first round or the third round, and the physical isn't right and they haven't disclosed something, then you know what, we'll get the pick next year and we'll run this all over again. But we're really trying to get honest answers from people, and you know, there's a lot of good guys in the game that represent these players that they don't want to see us get burned either. So I don't think that anybody, I think there's probably, you know, a little bit of stuff that my people would try to hide, but I think in general, most of them are going to be as up to, you know, honest as they can.
So how long has it been since you had your board ready for this draft? Did you start creating it the second last year's draft ended? And what kinds of things have caused players to move up or down? Is it something as simple as seeing something extraordinary on a social media feed or the portal that you talked about, conversations that you've had with people about, you know, just figuring out what their makeup is and what their situation is? How have guys moved up and down off of your board or around your board, I guess is a better way to say, in the last couple of months?
Well, I mean, as soon as we kind of basically got shut down and were told that we couldn't go out and we couldn't scout anymore, we started putting the board together in a little more of a firm way. It wasn't, you know, it was, we keep a board going the whole year. We started after the draft last year. We run it through, and it's really kind of loose, and it's trying to give guys a chance to get better and solidify their spots. And so we have that to work with. And then as this thing blew up on us, and now we're sitting there going, okay, we don't have any more games to go scout. We're not going to have any more information coming in that way. Now we have to put our board and solidify this thing and tighten it up. And so we approached it like we would a regular draft. We just moved everything up. We had our area scout meetings where the scouts, you know, we gave them time to get all their reports in that they were probably sitting on a little bit because they thought they'd see guys more. We gave them time to have some conference calls or calls with the players to get a general idea on makeup a little bit better. And then we had these meetings, and so we approached it like we were going to have a 10-round draft and talk about guys that you would consider for a 10-round draft, and we met with each one. So that was each scout. So it was a weeks-long worth of meetings to go over each one of their players, fine-tooth comb, talk about their makeup, talk about, you know, where they come from, what kind of year they had, all of that stuff. We get pretty deep. Watch video. And then after that was over, you know, we had the cross checkers. We had meetings with the cross checkers via Zoom, a lot of Zoom. We're pretty Zoomy. So now we got that going for us. And then we worked on different lists. So you'd ask the pitching cross checkers to, hey, let's put these guys in order, work together. So we refined that list. We refined the position player list, and then we've kind of put it together and blended it. And now we're in a situation now where it's in pretty good shape. And the only thing it's going to get, you know, massaged a little bit will be any late information that comes in that on somebody's health, or that we see some, you know, we get a little bit more video on somebody, or we get another crack at their Zoom with their makeup, any concerns like that. Or it's in pretty good shape right now, but it always has a little chance to move around a little bit.
So baseball scouts and school teachers are the Zoom experts we need to be kind of tapping into if we need help, huh?
Yeah, I guess that we're besides baseball, we finally learned that we have to do something else to be an expert at something else.
You mentioned makeup a couple of times, and I remember a few years ago, you had sent a picture or posted it in your draft room of, I guess it was a guy from the Bruins. It was a hockey player who was finishing a shift with a broken leg, and it said, "This is the kind of makeup we're looking for." And I want to know how looking for makeup, which is such a valuable exercise in every draft year for you, how has that been compromised as you're trying to do it in Zoom meetings instead of face-to-face meetings with parents and kids and teachers and coaches and whoever else you happen to try to use to evaluate that?
I think that, you know, we always thought that you had to do everything face-to-face, and, you know, And I still think that it's probably the best way of doing things, but I think that we're able to get pretty darn close with the makeup things with the Zoom. I don't think it's quite 100% like it would be if we were face to face with everybody. But in terms of moving forward and we learn how to do the Zoom calls, I think that we're with the savings of travel on travel that it's probably turns out to be fairly even way of trading it out. So I think that part about the makeup, we still have, you know, Chad Bowling and Lauren Johnson and Chris Passarella that are on our mental conditioning staff. And they had done so many of these meetings from starting last summer that we were ahead of the game. We try to get a lot of these meetings done in the fall. We get them done in the summer. We get them done before these kids really get deep into their seasons. And then so we don't have to be bothering them during their spring season. But with this year, the way it was like I was able to meet definitely more players than I have in the past. It's the same thing. Scott Lovekamp, our main pitching analyst, was able to spend a lot of time getting to meet these guys. We've incorporated player development people. Sam Breen, who's our, you know, director of pitching, has been involved in meeting with some of the players that, you know, we think could trickle to us. And we've showed these guys so many things about, you know, a peek behind the curtain of the New York Yankees player development. We've put together these unbelievable videos that show the player a little bit about himself and what we think about him, and then all sorts of every detail of the minor leagues, the Yankees, so they learn a lot. So we're learning a lot by showing them and teaching them, and then they're able to tell us a lot about themselves, and we're learn about their makeup through these things. And I've been doing this long enough and with enough where you know it's not perfect, but you're able to tell when you really have a good makeup guy. And you're also, you know, who's prepared for the meeting, who came into this with good questions. And I think that's the stuff that sticks out to you. And, you know, the Gregory Campbells of the world, of the Boston Bruins, that, you know, come off the ice with their broken leg, you know, I mean, that's hard for us to see on a Zoom call, but, you know, we do our best work. We try to do our best work in the summer and the fall to see that, and then have just dialogue with coaches to say, who are your warriors? Who are your grinders? You know, that's the kind of guy. So, yeah, it's quite a challenge, though, this way.
So there is now a huge pool of undrafted players. How and when does the recruiting of those guys start?
Well, I mean, we've approached a lot of players already at this point, and like they're going to be drafts, and to hopefully that, you know, and I've told them, I said, listen, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to get taken. We're only going to be able to take three players. So somebody's going to get left out. But, you know, there is a chance that you, if you get drafted by somebody else, you know, God bless you, and I'm happy for you, and I hope it works out. But if you're not, and, you know, and you have interest, we'd like you to understand what the Yankees are all about before that time ever comes. So, you know, that's why we've spent so much time on these individual meetings and these calls to the players, and we've shown them these documents that we've put together and these presentations about Yankee minor leagues, Yankee major leagues, and Yankee player development, that hopefully, if, you know, I'm sure they'll be disappointed that they didn't get drafted, but once they get over that and the 48-hour rule or 48 hours expires from after the draft to when you can sign them, they might have had that time where they can go, you know what, the Yankees really look like they're a good fit. They really look like they take care of their guys, and they made a great impression on me. And you know what? I'm gonna start my career now, and that's who I want to go with.
So is that a dark period for 48 hours, or is that time spent recruiting by you and every other organization?
Yeah. No, we can't talk to them.
Okay,
it's something for this year where for 48 hours, you can't talk to anybody that you didn't select. So, and during that 48 hours, a player can basically opt out. He can notify Major League Baseball that he does not want to be considered to be signed as a passed over player. And then we will get notification of that, so you won't be bugging somebody. But once he opts out, you know, he won't be able to be signed again until the following draft.
Okay. This is a weird question, and I don't know, you know, how you want to answer this best way you can. There, any player you sign who isn't drafted, the max bonus a guy can get is $20,000. Is that a lot of money? I mean, when you're talking about guys who are between, say, round six on up to 40 or undrafted, I know sometimes because you have the large pool, the amount you can use for a player that's, you know, say in round 8 or 10 can shift because of what's available in the pool. But for a player who's a good player who expected to get drafted this year and isn't, and his only way into professional baseball is by signing in this window that starts 48 hours later, is $20,000 a lot?
Well, you know what? I think it's obviously that's per individual, and it's per what's going on in their life and what they want to do. If $20,000 is if that's what they want to sign for, if they don't want to sign for that, then they can wait till next year and try to run through this again when we have more rounds. They can, or they can say, hey, look, it's time to start. It's a small portion that I'm going to have to deal with, but I'm looking at the end of the rainbow and thinking that my money's going to come in the major leagues. And I would have to think that that's the way that player has to approach it. They can't approach it like, hey, I'm going to be able to live off the $20,000 and go from there. That's for sure. It's just going to be, you know, here's my opportunity. I'm ready to take this chance. I'm done with school, or I'm close to being done with school. And one thing you got to remember, Sweeney, is not all these guys, I'd say less than 5% of them are on some sort of full scholarship.
Right.
So the idea that we can give them $20,000 and pay for school might be more attractive than somebody who's going to a, you know, an expensive college who's getting, you know, 25% on an $80,000 bill. And then all of a sudden we're able to say, you know what, we'll take care of the college part of it and the $20,000.
Right.
That becomes attractive to somebody. You know, as a father and stuff who has three kids that are, I know how expensive that can be. and it's, so, you know, it might be an attractive situation for somebody who's goes to an expensive college and gets little to no financial assistance.
What are you hearing from college coaches, and what's the trickle down of college juniors who decide, okay, like you said, they want to gamble on next year's draft and come back for their senior year? It's created quite a logjam. What are you hearing from the coaches in that regard?
I think some of them are happy that they're going to get so many of their kids back because they were in a situation that it was a good year for them. Some of them it's put into a pickle because their university that they're at has already told them, it's like, listen, they can say what they want, but we have 11.7 scholarships and that's all we can afford. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't do, if they're giving us leeway to bring seniors back, the university's baseball program cannot afford to do that. So somebody's going to have to go, you know, whether it's the senior is not going to get any scholarship money. Yeah, you can come back, but there's no money. Mm-hmm. Or the freshman who was coming in, that's like, yeah, you know, you can come in, but, you know, the shortstop that you thought you were going to replace, he's coming back now. So there is a big logjam on this thing it's going to affect everybody. And I think that it's, some of the colleges will benefit from having a veteran team that can afford it and have a bigger roster and do pretty well. And I think some of the other ones are going to be hurting. And we've already seen Bowling Green, we've seen Furman, we've seen there's talk of somebody else that they've already canceled their programs, you know, that baseball's done at the D1 level at these places.
Well, and I'm guessing this isn't just a 1 year thing. I mean, the logjam here could last for a while. I mean, if you're talking about say revenue sports that have to fund an entire athletic program, and football starts in the fall without fans in the stands, that's a big hit for the entire athletic program heading into next year and perhaps the year after that.
Yeah, I would think that there's very few, you know, D1 college, D1 baseball schools that are self-supportive. You know, there's definitely some that are, and those they've done a great job with their fan base, and they've done unbelievable work, and they're fun places to go visit and watch. But there's so many other ones that are reliant on football. You know, so if you don't have football and you know, there is going to be some problems with a lot of sports, and baseball included. So I know that there's some talk out there about, you know, pushing the baseball season to a later spring, which would eliminate a lot of the northern teams having to travel south and fly south a lot to get their games in against competition. You know, they could play more home games. It would warm up a little bit more for them to play more home games. And the players would stay till after graduation, but that cost would be, you know, it would be less than it would be to fly them every weekend down south in February and early March to play, you know, to play baseball games and have no home revenue. So it's an interesting concept that I think, you know, people are starting to look at, and that, you know, maybe it gets some legs.
Every year there are high school players that, you know, you're very honest with them and tell them, listen, you're going to be better off by going to college. You're going to get better as a player and this and that, and we'll see in a few years. Does that part become a little harder for the high school player now if there's a logjam at the college level and it's not simply a one-year thing? There's a couple of years worth of you know, drafts and things like that before that can reset. Does the high school player does the mid-range high school player, maybe the one that's not good enough to play professionally right now, is that the guy that gets hurt or squeezed out here?
You know, I don't know if it's going to be. I think that everything's going to still be about competition. And yeah, that some guys are offered that opportunity to go to some big places, big colleges, and some of those opportunities that they've had, they stick with them, and the college stays with them. And so that you know, they those kids will get that chance to grow there. I think possibly what you could see is you could see an influx at the in the South, you know, especially in the Floridas and the Californias and the Texases, where some kids decide, you know what, it's not looking good, I'm going to go to junior college for a year, I'm going to go to junior college for 2 years and play there and see how it goes, and then see what opens up. Or you can see some guys going to some schools that they, you know, had not the SEC or not the PAC schools or something, and possibly those other colleges benefit from some of these guys showing up there and being able to play.
There's an effect here that's not just on this year's draft, but the players that you've drafted recently. I know how much you keep up with the guys after you draft them and kind of watch their progress. How concerned are you about the development curve for the recently drafted players without minor league baseball this year? I'm looking at, you know, just as an example, Anthony Volpe was your first round pick last year, and he got 150 plate appearances. And that means he'll have 150 plate appearances over the course of his first two professional years. And you're going to have guys who get into the professional ranks this year that don't have the competition to be able to get even that many plate appearances this year, or innings if you're a pitcher. How concerned are you about these guys, whether it's the guys who have just been drafted the last few years or the ones coming in, just the idea that not having minor league baseball at all could really impact their development?
You know, I mean, it's really, really because you sit there and you know that game experience is second to none. We're doing a heck of a job here in developing skills and developing tools, and we've got some great player development people, and we've got all the analysts, and we've got all of the technology there is, and it's helping kids get better. But playing the game of baseball and learning in front of crowds and in front of with pressure is you can't replicate that. And that's the part to me that is going to be, it's going to be a little bit scary, you know, and everybody's in the same boat. I mean, there's nobody else is in it, you know, just like the draft, we're all in the same boat, mm-hmm. but it still isn't does not help the kid. And it's not like you can go somewhere else and do it. You know, I mean, you're not going to get to play more baseball in college. You're not going to get to go play, you know, more baseball somewhere else. So, you know, we're just all sitting there going, let's get to back where these guys can compete. And some of them, you know, that's their deal. I mean, they're all about the compete, and they can't, it's just got to be driving them nuts.
Yeah. I want to switch gears with you for a moment, Damon. Back in March, when things first shut down, a couple of Yankee minor leaguers were the first ones to publicly be known that they tested positive, and they had to be quarantined. And all of your minor leaguers, before people got sent home into different corners, were quarantined in their facility. A group of personnel with the Yankees had to deliver food to them every day, and you were one of them. What was the experience like of going door to door to these guys and making sure they're okay, and seeing these young kids who are from all over, and they had the idea that they were going to be in Tampa for spring training and then starting their season, and things kind of, you know, the rest of us got to go home to our own homes, and they didn't. What was your experience like with these guys, seeing them on a daily basis and how they handle it?
You know what, I got to give it to the kids. They really handled it well. They were very appreciative. They were very polite. I think that they really realized that how well we were taking care of them and watching out for them, and that, you know, people came from the general manager to, you know, the farm director to myself to, you know, other people, the training staff, you know, we were here for those guys. And I think that we preach that when we go to sign players that, you know, we actually care about you. And I think we showed it, and the Steinbrenners showed it by the meals that they were preparing. I mean, we'd give out a breakfast, lunch, and a dinner that, you know, heck, I'd take one home once in a while because it was so good. And you're just like, yeah. We had an extra one. That'll be great. You know, and you developed a little bit more of a bond with the kids too. I mean, a lot of times we see these guys just as in their baseball world and it's, you know, hey, how's it going? Oh, it's going good. Blah, blah, blah. You know, a little bit of that. But in this one, it was like, we were all in this, you know, kind of in this boat together, and we were all battling something together. And I think that they looked at you more like, you know, you're not the scouting director, you're Damon, you know, and you're not the baseball player, you're Anthony, you know. I mean, it was, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, bring my dog down there and they'd play with him, you know. So I think we all kind of bonded a little bit together. And then even more on the international kids who I don't know often much about, and then they'd see your face on a daily basis, and you were the guy that was handing them their food, and they understood a little bit more that you do care about. So I we did the best we could with that. I think it was an experience that I'm glad, you know, under the circumstances, I'm glad that, you know, I was able to do.
Damon, last thing here. In early March, Kelly Rodman lost her battle with cancer. She was a scout in the Yankee organization for only a few years, but her impact was pretty powerful. I know the Yes Network did a feature on her that got some pub again later on social media shortly after she passed. What can you tell people about the impact she had on the players that she saw and the people in your organization, to the point where you named an award after her that you're going to get about every single year? you know, she wasn't with your organization for a long period of time. What can you tell people about the impact she made?
Yeah, you know, it was crushing to lose Kelly. I mean, Kelly was somebody who I probably know that I didn't appreciate well enough when it first started, when she first started working for us. And as I slowly got to know her and watched her work and watched her talk to her and looked at her reports, you were like, I really have something special here. And the Yankees really have somebody special that makes an impact in the Northeast. She makes an impact with families. She makes an impact with players. She cared so much about everybody else that she didn't even want people to know how bad it was that was going on with her cancer. But, you know, getting back to her a little bit, she was just such a good baseball person. You know, I mean, in terms of, you hear that term a lot, that guy is a good baseball, but she was just so smart when it came to knowing players, scouting players, writing reports, and then just the impact that she would have in the house, because she was a female, that the mothers would be, you know, so receptive to listening to her side of what the Yankees were about. She was incredible, and it's just unbelievably sad that we in the Yankees, we in baseball, and we in this world would lose somebody, you know, like her, who was so giving, and she didn't want anything back. She didn't want to be a scout because she was a woman. She didn't think she deserved to be anything because of anything but her pure ability to do a good job. And she made these coins out that when she knew she was dying, and it was like one side of it says, be great today. And the other side of it says, thank you from Kelly, that she had that you're just like, you know, I keep it with me every day, you know, grab my wallet, grab my money, grab my keys and grab my coin. And it's there for you to think, you know, if you ever think you have something, you're having a rough day or it's, you know, not going good, you just grab that coin and you remember Kelly. And it was, she was great. You know, I mean, it's a huge blow to our organization. It's a huge blow to baseball in the Northeast.
My thanks to Damon Oppenheimer for sharing his insights on the upcoming MLB draft. The 5-round draft will be held next week, and hopefully by then, the parties involved can make enough progress to have a real baseball season on the horizon. If you're new here, please check out the 30 with Murdy archive at radio.com or Apple Podcasts. Check out recent conversations with Hall of Famer Joe Torre, Saturday Night Live director Don Roy King, and Ricky Cobb, the brains behind the Super 70s Sports Twitter account. When you get to the archive, make sure to subscribe and review and all that jazz. As always, please continue to stay safe. And until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy. Thanks for listening.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.